So today, as we get into the second part of A New Way to Be Human, as people, as Christians, we need to be informed about issues that are happening in our society. We need to really be able to form opinions about these things. And more importantly, we need to not be silent, but also know how to represent the views that are biblical and have a biblical worldview in a graceful way. The question is, if Jesus was here today, how would he respond to these issues? Okay, so let me just start by talking about a guy, an astronaut. How many of us know Apollo 13? Apollo 13, you know, Houston, we have a problem. So there's an astronaut by the name of Jim Lovell. So Jim Lovell is famous for this quote. He says, there's three kinds of people. You might have heard this before. The first kind of people is they make things happen. Okay, the first kind of people, they make things happen. Then the second time kind of people is they watch things happen. They kind of like, oh, you know, like. And then the third kind of people is they say, what happened? What kind of people are you? So the issue that that really troubled me, I lost sleep over this over Thursday night. On Thursday night, we on the 8th of August, I call it a dark day in Oceania. So the abortion law passed its very first reading in Parliament in New Zealand. There's about four stages to get into law in government. So it passed its very first stage. It wasn't just a very close race. It was a complete landslide for the abortion legislation bill to be passed. As you can see, 94 to 23. 94 voted for it to get into the next stage and 23 against it. And interestingly, across the ditch in New South Wales, the state of New South Wales, so apparently in Australia, the law is passed state by state. They also passed on the same day in the lower house this a similar bill to decriminalize abortion. And then the very next day, 9th of August, I jumped online. Stuff.co.nz is one of our popular online news sources. It's okay, it's not the greatest, but it's something that I go to have a look at what's going on. And on the front page, you can see stretcher fall charges, million-dollar view behind the fence, baby dies with alcohol in system, nothing to do with what had just happened 8 to 10 hours ago. And then I had to click on the health section, and the fourth article down is something called People Need to Trust Women. If you didn't know that that was to do with this bill, because like trust women with what? You know, eating well or, you know, dressing well? That quote is actually to do with the fact that a big thrust of this abortion bill is about women having the right to decide for themselves what they do with their own body in regards to abortion. So if you didn't know that, you wouldn't know that that was to do with this bill. So the next day, the very next morning, there was nothing really spoken about it unless you were looking. A friend of mine who is in the media, she appears on the breakfast show regularly. She said that there's a reason behind this because the media outlets always would rank the important news stories and they'll refresh it every 8 to 10 hours to bring new issues up to give people attention. And I, while I understand that it needs to cycle through and bring new stories through, but the question is, you know, there was not so long ago, there was a shooting in Christchurch. For about a whole week, that was in the front page. The front two or three links was about that. And here we have a piece of legislation that is so important that the next day, it's not even on the front pages. What is going on? Here's what our Prime Minister says. I don't believe abortion should be in the Crimes Act, so this is one of the primary drivers of this legislation. Okay? Let me just start by saying this. The purpose of tonight is not to make you believe or form my view or share my view. The purpose of tonight is to be able to present some of the facts and really encourage you to go and read and learn for yourself. And also to present a biblical worldview. You're going to hear me talk unashamedly about what the Bible says and thinks about abortion. And because we are clearly, as a church, as Christians, pro-life, if you understand what that is, but I can speak a little bit more about that. And so here we've got our Prime Minister of New Zealand saying that abortion should not be in the Crimes Act, which I actually don't disagree. I can understand why the abortion perhaps needs to be taken out of the Crimes Act. But, you know, so women don't feel like criminals if they get an abortion. But having said that, I do understand why it can and should be in the Crimes Act, because anything that is lowered in standard in terms of the importance or the implications of the act will just promote the actual act among society. So I just want to also say before I go on is that I'm very conscious that there are people potentially even in this room that have either been through abortions or you've lost a child, miscarriage, or you know someone that has been through abortions or someone that is struggling with it right now. I want you to hear me right now that what I'm about to share, my intentions is not to bring any condemnation, and God's intention is not to cause anyone to feel any condemnation. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because even if the act of abortion has been performed in the past, you know, just like any other issue that is very complex, just like any other things that we as humans do that is wrong, there is always grace for forgiveness from God. So I want you to hear me right there before I proceed. Is that cool? All right, so we're going to take, it's going to be a little bit more fact-based tonight. And so bear with me. And we've got a guest speaker tonight that's going to join me shortly, just going to help me out with some expert information. So I've flown this person all the way from West Auckland. And so, not really, no. And so we'll get the other mic ready as well. I think there's second mic here. So let's talk a little bit about a summary, okay? How many of us think it's good to summarize the situation, right? There's so many articles you can read. And so this is my summary, which I've drawn from the government's website. So please forgive me if it's not completely perfect, but this will talk to you about the key points. So the things that are changing through this piece of legislation, number one, currently, okay, so the two sides, before and the proposed, before being now or current, any woman that is pregnant 20 weeks or less pregnant requires two doctors to approve an abortion, okay? So the criteria to approve this abortion goes like this. Either it could cause serious danger to the woman's life or physical or mental health. Secondly, that it could cause the baby to have abnormality, or the baby has abnormality, serious abnormality. Thirdly, the pregnancy resulted from incest, which is, sex between family members. And fourthly, the woman is severely subnormal, being mentally incapacitated. So that's current. The proposed is that for a woman who is less than 20 weeks pregnant, that woman can self-refer for an abortion without any intervention from a medical professional. That's the proposed changes, right? Next. So just delving a bit deeper on that. The Stats New Zealand, Statistics New Zealand says this. In 2018, 60% of abortions were performed by 9 weeks gestation, meaning that what we're proposing to go towards, that a woman can go for an abortion, sign up for abortion with no other approval and intervention when she's less than 20 weeks, at least 60% could go through it without any intervention or any covering or accountability. And so without accountability, you can think that probably more people would go for it as well, right? So that's a cause for a huge concern. What else is changing? As Jacinda Ardern, our Prime Minister, says, it's currently in the Crimes Act, and afterwards it'll be taken out of the Crimes Act. So that's one of the four major things that are changing. And then the final one is, for a woman that's more than 20 weeks pregnant, currently two doctors have to approve under the following conditions in order to save the woman's life or prevent serious or permanent injury to her physical or mental health. And then a proposed is, for a woman who's over 20 weeks pregnant, only one doctor needs to be involved. And that doctor's approval can be based upon any potential harm to the woman's physical or mental health or general well-being. Can you see how it's become very, very, very accessible? So what it's saying is that for a fetus that is greater than 20 weeks old, only one doctor has to make the call, and the criteria is very, very, very broad. MP Simon O'Connor spoke in Parliament on the day that the votes were happening, and he said this: it's ironic that those promoting the abortion bill have already been born. Now, we haven't even spoken about what the Bible says. This statement itself has got me thinking. You and I can have our opinions about abortion, but we're alive. The question is, for the unborn child, who is speaking for the unborn child? Who is standing up for the unborn child? Putting aside what the Bible says about all these matters, just purely looking at it from a humanity perspective. What does the Bible say? It says, and this was from King David, from the book of Psalms. So the book of Psalms is a collection of poems and songs written by King David. And I love this, Psalm 139, one of my favorite psalms in the Bible. Verse 13, it says, for you formed my inward parts, you knitted me together in my mother's womb. It was a song of praise, a song of adoration to God. And he was saying that, God, you created me, you made me, you knew me when I was in my mother's womb. You knitted me together. It wasn't just a random act. It was a careful knitting together. God knows every single cell in your body. He knows every single cell in those fetuses. So what does it mean to be human? Let me say this. By quoting Dr. Joseph Goebbels, the minister of propaganda for Nazi Germany, I am not connecting this act of abortion to Nazi Germany at all, but I am pointing towards the actual the quote that he's saying to help me cover off the next point. It says, once the victim's full humanity was denied, killing them becomes easier to justify. Crazy, right? And that's what Nazi Germany used the philosophy to justify the killing of millions of Jews, because they were subhuman. I don't know how, if I were living in that day, how anyone could believe in propaganda like that, but somehow they did. Society in Germany at that time moved in that direction. Question is, what's going to happen in our world and our society today, right here in Auckland, New Zealand? The United Nations, if you know the United Nations, quite an influential group of people, quite an influential organization, and says this: the UN Human Rights Committee formally excludes the unborn child from the right to life. Oh. You know, I can be many things, but I can't be a woman. So please forgive me if I'm speaking in such a way as though I understand what it means, feels like to be pregnant. I don't. But in speaking to people, I'm married. My wife has had two children. In speaking to many other people as a pastor that have ever been pregnant, I would suggest that any woman that has ever, at the point where she found out that she was pregnant, at that very point would believe deep within her heart that a human life has begun. I don't think any science can tell any woman, that's my personal opinion, that that is not a human life. But having said that, science has all kinds of different views on this, and so we can look into a few options as to how people view when life begins. The first view goes like this. Greg Henriques, I think, PhD from the site psychologytoday.com, says this. If self-reflective awareness and the capacity to justify is a key aspect of human exceptionalism, then it is immediately clear that a zygote or an embryo is not a fully functioning person. If self-reflective awareness and the capacity to justify is a key aspect of being human, then a fetus or a zygote is not human. That's one way to look at it. Wow, that means that even babies are not human. Is that right? Next, we're going to invite our expert that I've flown all the way from West Auckland. Shall we put our hands together for Dr. Gaudette Volmonte? Come on up. Okay, cool. So that's running out of battery, so I'll get you to use this. So let me just quickly introduce Gaudette. Come on through. So Gaudette's a very good friend of mine. We've known each other for several years. I've known you since you were a student. Doing her master's, and she is now a doctorate of molecular genetics research and also a lecturer at AUT. So I want to just get Gaudette to talk us through, and then you just click left and right for your slides, to really speak to us a little bit from her perspective as an expert in genetics about when human life begins. And so she's going to rely on a few other sources as well. So thank you, Gaudette.
Thanks, Pastor Ryong. Hi, everyone. Cool. Got some slides here, but before I go on to the slide, I just want to emphasize on the meaning of life in terms of biology. So for something to be considered as a living organism in terms of biology, it needs to be something that can grow and develop. It needs to be something that can reproduce, and it needs to be something that can maintain a stable internal condition. There's also other, other definitions of life, but those are the main three. And for life, the main structural unit of life is obviously, you guys know it, the cell. Okay. And so organisms can either be composed of one cell or many cells, either unicellular or multicellular. A human being is considered as a multicellular organism. And in here is a picture of a little diagram here of how a human develops from fertilization down to when the embryo implants onto the uterus. Okay? So obviously the first one would be a fertilized egg. So that's a state when the egg is fertilized by a sperm. And after fertilization, after a few hours, the nucleus of the sperm fuses with the nucleus of an egg. And then that state, the DNA or the genetic component of a cell would then be different from what is the mom's genetic component and the dad's genetic component. It will be combination of those. Okay? And then the cell at 2 days will be in a four-cell stage. After 3 days, it will be a ball of cells called blastomeres. And then by 4 days, it will be called a blastocyst. And by 7 days, this blastocyst would implant, would move towards the uterus. So here is the ovary of a woman. It will, after ovulation, it will move towards the fallopian tube, and then it will implant in the womb. Yeah. At this stage, at the blastocyst stage, a developing embryo already has the three main types of cells that would later on develop to the different kinds of cells that we have. So it will have one type of tissue that will develop to our, that will later on develop as our nervous system and our skin. And then another type of tissue that would develop as our muscles and our internal organs, and another type of tissue that will develop into the linings of our organs. And so at that stage, you know, a blastocyst, you know, is if it pushes through down, you know, a complete pregnancy, it already has the cells that will bring about an entire individual. And at this stage, it will implant itself in the womb of a woman. And this at the blastocyst stage, it is when the embryo releases some hormone, which is then detected nowadays in the pregnancy tests. It's called human chorion gonadotropic hormone, and it's the, you know, and usually that's a test that we, you know, we use to find out if, you know, if a lady is pregnant. Although there are also other tests that would need to be done. Okay, by four weeks of development. A developing embryo would have a heart already. In that case, it only has two chambers of its heart, and the heart will continue to develop until 8 weeks, when it already has four chambers. But a heart already starts pumping within 4 weeks. And in terms of the definition of a fetus, usually they say that a developing human is already considered a fetus at around 9 weeks, okay? Between 8 to 9 weeks. Okay? So that's when they call it fetus. Before that, they call it an embryo. By this stage, at the start, within 8 weeks, as I've said, you have already a pumping heart. This is how it looks like already. It's like a miniature human already, 8 weeks, just 2 months. And all the body systems are already present. Okay? Just not, you know, a complete body system, but it is already there that's going to develop. Okay? By 9 to 12 weeks, you could see here, you got the head is dominant. You've got the facial features more developed. Bone formation accelerating, sex is readily detected from the baby's genitalia. By 13 to 16 weeks, you've got all the sensory organs present, okay? Further development, okay? And then by 17 to 20 weeks, okay? It already has all the limbs already, you know, almost achieving the final proportions. And it is in this stage where the baby starts to have some muscular activity. So for some ladies, that's when they start kicking or when they feel the baby is moving. Okay. And with the current bill, it is, you know, from the first few first slide that I showed you, the first few you know, cells, and then down to this stage. This is where they say that any woman can decide that, you know, if a woman, you know, can just self-refer themselves to have abortion. And there's a question of when does life begin? And in terms of medical ethics, I read, you know, an article and been reading about this before, that they say that a fetus, yeah, is considered to be a human, yeah, at the 8 or 9 week stage, because that is the stage when a fetus already has an ability to maintain a stable internal condition. It is, you know, still dependent on the mom, but it is able to maintain a stable internal condition. However, there are still different views regarding where or when a fetus is considered human. Is it at conception or during fertilization, or is it during implantation, or is it when the baby is in the fetus stage? And that's where the debate is at the moment. But of course, you know, as Christians, we will have God's view of how we are as we develop during in our mother's womb.
So let's give her a big hand. Yes, thank you. Got it. Just stay there for a second. So just you know, that's great science, isn't it? I mean, so what I'm understanding here is that really the as early as 9 weeks, current medical science and medical ethics considers the embryo or the zygote as a full human being with full rights. Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right. Thank you so much. Cool. All right. My apologies for the flickering screen. So if you have eye problems, please go see Larry. Your eye specialist. Yes. Okay. Cool. So here. So just to summarize that, a fertilized cell is considered a living cell, though not an individual yet. A blastocyst, as you saw at implantation, about 7 days after fertilization, is considered an entity with sufficient organic unity to be a biological individual, a precursor to a human. And then at 9 weeks, it is considered a functioning human organism. So this guy, Mark T. Brown, said this under his article, The Moral Status of the Human Embryo. It says, at the onset of the fetal period, 9 weeks, and for the rest of his or her life, the fetus is a human being with all the rights and duties that it entails. 9 weeks. So really, there's still debate out there and discussion, but really, my question is that if there's still this debate and discussion out there as to when something is a human, then if I'm not sure if something is a human, then should I go ahead and take that thing's life? If you're not sure. Right? So I'll leave that to you to decide. Another thing is that it talks about abortion is a health issue. Well, I'm sure it's not just the fact that it's considering it as a disease, but it sure sounds like that. So I think that really it is a health issue, but there is so much more to abortion than just it being having a runny nose. So next, what is our attitude? You know, it could be, I don't care. You know, it doesn't affect me. So often, even myself, when I caught up with all of this information recently, I really repented. I felt so sick in my stomach that I had to spend some time apologizing to God. Because, yes, I've been overseas for 3 weeks. I've been studying. I've been busy. There's so many things to do. And then suddenly, on Tuesday night, I heard that they are voting on Thursday night. And I thought to myself, how come for such an important issue, I as a human being, first and foremost, secondly as a Christian, and thirdly as a leader of a church, I have not done anything to the extent that I should have done to inform myself about this issue. So I was really repenting and asking God to forgive me for being ignorant towards this issue. And over the last 24 hours, as you can see, I've learned a lot. And information is out there and available. And I encourage all of us to do the work necessary, not only for ourselves, but for the next generation. I'm too busy, of course. We're always busy. It's going to happen anyway, like overseas. I reached out to my friends in America, in South Africa, in the UK, even last night. And many of them said things like, oh yeah, this was passed more than 10 years ago, or 5 years ago, last year, and you know, and it seemed normal to them. You know, these are Christian leaders, not that they don't care, but you know what, when this is passed, if this is passed in Parliament in a year's time, you know what, we will probably have moved on. Seriously, you know, how should we respond as a church, as a community of believers? I don't know what to do. Well, today's a start. I hope that tonight you've learned a few things, or even it's, you know, encouraged you to reach out and find out more. Talk to each other about it. Feel free to talk to me about it as to what to do next. It's too difficult to understand. You don't have to be a biologist to understand this. And I know that many of us are immigrants to this country, and I'm pretty sure not many of us would think this, but I know people that would say this. This is not my country. If you live in this country, it is your country. Whether you're going to stay here long term or not, you have a right to speak while you live here in this nation. And I believe that you and I have a duty of care to do what we can in a democratic nation to express our opinions. What does the Bible say about this? Proverbs 31, 8 and 9. Let's read this all together on the count of three. One, two, three. Open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all who are destitute. Open your mouth, judge righteously, defend the rights of the poor and needy. And I'll just add that, my little addition, and the unborn child. You know, when we talk about standing up for the rights of the poor and the needy, these poor and needy people are already born. The unborn child has no, is the most defenseless organism or human being that there can be. A baby can cry. An unborn child has no voice. So you know what's next? What can I do? What can you do? So the first step, as you can see, has been passed. The bill was introduced in August last year. In August this year. And the first reading was on Thursday, just gone. So it's passed. Landslide victory for the four side. And then the next step, it's going to a select committee. So what a select committee is basically a group of experts, I think, from a range of points of view, pro-life, pro-choice, and medical experts and all kinds will be gathered together by our government to study this issue and make a recommendation. Now, what it says here is that, let me just click on this. There is an opportunity for the public, which is you and I, to make submissions to the select committee. It says submissions can be written by anyone. Look at your neighbor and say, you are anyone. And help the committee understand what the public think about a particular issue. When I jumped on the next day, on the 9th of August, to look at the submissions submitted, guess how many were submitted? Zero. Yes, it's only less than 24 hours after the bill had been passed, but I know many, many people have already been known about this issue and known about the process, known about the opportunity of submitting, but no one had made any submissions towards this issue. And it's saying that the committee wants to know what the public thinks about it, right? So if you have an opinion or you don't have one yet, form one. And you might think, well, my English is not so good, or I haven't written for a long time, or I don't write, like to write essays. I don't think it's really that complicated. You know, I think there are ways, and there's an organization called Family First, which I'll talk about shortly, that has provided a lot of material, even some template paragraphs and excerpts that can help us write a submission towards the government. So I think if we, as many of us, would form an opinion and submit your opinion to the committee, the hope is that the committee will make a decision that's representative of what the public thinks. Because seriously, I don't know many people, not just Christians, I know many non-Christians as well, I don't know many that actually would suggest that abortion should be made so much more accessible. I know many people that would agree that abortion should be taken out of the Crimes Act, that it's not a criminal activity, but what, as I was showing earlier, it was making, the abortion legislation bill is making abortions a lot more accessible. So it's not just about decriminalizing abortions. I don't know many people that would agree that it's a good idea to make abortions that much more accessible. So let's make sure that the government know that the public, many, many of the public, I don't know how many percentage, disagree with this. Okay. What would Jesus do? Matthew 19:14 says, slightly out of context, but I think it's relevant. It says, let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for to such belong the kingdom of heaven. It says, do not hinder the, you know, Jesus has such a heart and regard for little children. Why? I suggest that because children have such innocent faith that Jesus just loves children to come to him and look at him and believe in him and express faith in him. And these little children have the ability to come. When he says, do not hinder, I would extend that maybe to say, for these unborn children, do not hinder means let's fight for their rights to be able to be born, to even get to the starting line. You know, a new way to be human, as this series is called, as humans, let us defend the rights of those who are unable to defend themselves. You know, I'm sorry that tonight's message is a little bit heavy and, you know, but I think this is something that we all need to hear, you know, and I'm hoping that this will really encourage all of us to keep calm and get informed. Let's get informed. So lastly, what can I do? Number one, pray. Please pray. Please pray. You know, you can do all the study and research and all that, but if you're not praying for God's will to be done, then we're not going with God's blessing. We're not going with God's favor. We're not going with God's input. Number two, get informed, ask questions, and read. There's so much material out there. I mean, it's endless, you know, but when it comes down to it, the issue has been overcomplicated by people. It really is very, very fundamental and simple. But I'll leave that to you to find out. Number three, talk about it. Don't be afraid to talk about it. You know, sometimes we feel so afraid to offend people. Maybe that people might think that, oh, you disagree with me, so you hate me or you don't like me. There's a way to speak respectfully. Ask questions, you know. I would say the best thing to do is if someone is pro-abortion, you first thing is not to tell them what you think. The first thing is to go, hey, can you tell me more about why you would think abortion is a good idea? Can you tell me about when human life begins? Can you tell me about... And wait and listen, don't argue. Wait and genuinely listen. And I would suggest that there's many people who's never been at that stage of having to have an abortion would maybe jump on a bandwagon and support an issue because it's a popular issue. I would suggest that there are people on both sides, pro and against, that are very, very uninformed, that would just jump on some fake news and some social media posts and go, that's what I believe and think. So let's not be people that are uninformed. You know, let's at least do the work necessary to, in love, form an opinion, and then communicate and talk about it. And the last one, I want to encourage all of us to, if you can, look into making a submission to the Select Committee by the 14th of September.